Wingers, welcome into Winging It, presented by Wingman of the Year. Now let's get ready to wing it.
Welcome to Wing It, presented by Wingman of the Year. Today we have Corey Hilton joining us. He is a male exotic dancer and an author. Corey, how the hell are you doing?
Very good, very good. Thank you guys so much for having me on. I'm going to go ahead and edit that a little bit. It's former male exotic dancer.
Former.
I'm way too old for doing that stuff now. So, but yeah, no, thank you guys so much.
You can still get it. Don't give us good, that.
I'm older. I'm not old. I'm older. So
George Clooney's older. And he's still killing it. He's still fucking 20-year-olds.
You know, yeah. Well, you know, kudos to George. I got to give him the old, I guess maybe I need to be his wingman or vice versa. I don't know. I'm doing the wrong thing over here. I'm just a single 52-year-old guy here in another week. So, you know, but illustrious past, looking forward to the future. It's not all about what I did before. It's what I'm doing now, but got some great stories, you know, definitely. And I love to tell them because I've always had people say, Corey, tell me another story. And I had so many that I had to write a friggin' book. So, hey, you know, it's there. And not all about the book though. You know, I'm definitely going into a different realm that I really want to help other people out the process. So yeah,
okay. Cool. We love to hear that on Wingman of the Year, you want to help other people out. That's a number one trait of a wingman is helping other people. But you, nonetheless, you got an interesting story. We bring interesting people on Winging It. Okay. That's why you're here. So Corey, how did you get into stripping? How does someone even get into that?
Yeah, shit. You know, it's different, you know, for everybody really, but mine's really unique, you guys. Like, I'll just kind of backtrack a little bit. I'll definitely tell you, cause I entered into this crazy ass game at about 17 years old. I was underage to even be in a bar, still going to high school, you know, kind of mediocre in a lot of ways, not wanting to be, wanting acceptance, all those things that everybody wants when they're in high school. Went through some bullying and stuff and really just didn't want to have that continue. So I built my body up and really got into the carport, started working out in there with a buddy of mine and ended up in the gym. And really over about a year or so built my body up and I wasn't getting bullied anymore. And really when it came down to it, I will say that due to my upbringing, I went into this industry because I had a couple of parents that were actually my grandparents. I was adopted, so I went a generation up. Those grandparents of mine were Depression era people. So they had a really great, I guess you could say, like, as far as what they represented, it was a lot of morality. It was a lot of integrity. My dad said a lot of those words to me on long walks as a kid, yeah. You know, telling me the rights and the wrongs, right? So I always kind of stuck to that. But one other thing that they did do was when I got into this career at 17 years old, believe it or not, they actually supported me. They said, hey, you know, if you're going to do this thing, we don't mind. As long as you don't get messed up on drugs, as long as you keep your grades up, we don't even care, man. Go out and do your thing. Because they already raised a generation of kids. And they kind of figured if they tell me no, I'm probably going to sneak out and do it anyways. So they may as well support me and let me do what I needed to do. And so it helped out with the money end of things. So I was making money at the same time. But how I got into it, that was a really interesting thing. Because what happened was after I was getting bullied, I needed a change of environment. And if you want change, you got to change. You got to go and get around new people and all that stuff. So I did Absolutely. That. I still live by that process even now. But back then I went to an environment of people that were a little older than me. So the group that I started hanging out in school with, well, those guys were 2 years older than me and they were already going to the bars, right? Like, and they were working out and stuff like that, typical bodybuilder dudes. But at the same time, they were working the door at clubs and stuff. And one of my buddies that worked the door, he worked at the door at like the number one ladies night in British Columbia, Canada at that time. We're talking 1987. It's the heyday of ladies night. It's like lineups up down the street. Dancers are treated like superstars, politically incorrect all the way. Basically, let's put it this way. I freaking miss it a little bit. Let's put it that way. It's not the same as the world now, right?
Yeah.
But back then, what kind of happened was this buddy of mine says to me at the gym, he says, hey, you know, throw a university shirt on and come down to the club and I'll just let you in the door. And me all nervous, I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. Never been in a nightclub before. I think I took the bus there, you know, got there when the bloody doors were opening up. There's not a soul around. And I walk up the stairs and I see this guy standing there, and my buddy, and he's like, yeah, come on in. So there's nobody there and awkward. he turns around and says, I want to introduce you to the manager. So the manager comes over and shake his hand and he says, yeah, so you going to school? And I was like, yeah. And of course I wasn't lying, I mean, but at the same
yeah
time,
what college. Kind of school, yeah,
right. So he said, what are you doing, you know, for making a few extra bucks? And I was like, not much, I would love to be making a few extra. And he was like, all right. He goes, take your shirt off. And I thought, oh, okay. So I wheeled my shirt off because there's nobody around anyway, and he says, you're hired. And I was like, yeah. And he says, yeah, be here Tuesdays and Thursdays, come around the same time. You'll work ladies night from 7 o'clock till 11 o'clock. You don't even have to take off all your gear. You just take off your shirt, walk around, serve shooters, serve drinks to the women. The dancers are going to be on there. They're going to be doing their thing at the same time. You take 15% of everything you make off the bar. You make your tips, you take it all home with you. And you know, you'll have a lot of fun. And I was like, man, sign me up. Like any 17-year-old kids, like,
yeah,
dang, right. Yeah. So I was in there. And as soon as that happened, you guys, it was like I dropped into this new world. And this was like a world of like insanity that I'd never experienced before. And it was just literally like walking into sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This place was like so original as far as a ladies' night scene. They had like this velvet rope in the middle, and then they had this one side that was male dancers and all these women screaming their lungs out. And then on the other side, it was a bunch of calm guys sitting around watching a couple of female dancers doing their thing while the ladies' night was happening. And when 11 o'clock hit, it was like, bring it on. Everybody meets up and the party really gets going, right? So that was kind of the environment that I dropped into. So when I went in and I did my first night, I'll never forget it. It was so crazy, but I was pretty, you know, I was pretty reserved. I actually had a lot of nightmares as a kid about exposure. Like I was worried about, you know, zipper being open and my dick falling out or something and everybody seeing it. I just had nightmares of that. It was really weird. And so yeah, of course I dropped right into my biggest fear and go into an industry where I was taking all my gear off. But anyway, that first night, what happened was I went back to get changed after I'd finished my shift, and I walked back in and I walked by the door to the office, and there's a couple of girls laying, they're down on the floor and they're doing a duo act, like, and it's just crazy, right? And I'm like, whoa, I've never seen any of this stuff at all. And so I'm in there, I'm changing my clothes, and I got my pants around my freaking ankles, and these two gorgeous blondes come walking through the door and they just look at me and they're like, hey. And I was just like, I didn't even know what to say. Like, I'm like hanging out, right? Literally. And so I chatted with them, like, you know, really casual and whatever. Nothing happened, obviously, but that night it was kind of like, it was just kind of the weird beginning. And then so I built up a bit of a client base, and I started getting regulars that were coming in there. They buy like bottles of Dom Perignon. I was making like 15% off of that. Then they dropped me a $50 tip at the end of the night, and I was like, I was that kid that had the money and everything, and people were wondering like, what the hell, like, what is this guy doing? He's not dating anybody from high school, he has money, like, what's going on? And I kept it a secret, you guys. Like, I didn't tell anybody, right? So here I was in this club, and even when it hit my 19th birthday, when I was going to be legal, I had to tell everybody at the club it was my 21st, because it was just like, you know, I'd already been working in the bar for 2 years like that. But the crazy thing that happened in between time was I actually got offered at 18 years old to become a bouncer and work at the door on Friday and Saturday nights as well. So here I am standing at the door, and there's, again, like, there's some pretty interesting characters coming into this club. And I was IDing people, and I'm underage, and I'm IDing people. And I got like the police officer standing next to me asking me how my night is, and I'm not even legal to be there, right? And I'm the guy that's actually checking people. So it was just really crazy. And then from there, I started meeting these male dancers that were coming in, and they were like the top in Canada at the time. And I just got to know some of the top guys. And one guy in particular, he was like the Elvis of stripping in Canada. This guy was like rock solid body, chiseled mug on him, like hung like a freaking horse, could spin on a freaking dime. He was like the ultimate dancer, right? And so he gets out there, he does his show, but even better than that was who he was as off stage. Like, this guy, like, British accent, like, spoke really well, he treated people with respect, always dressed well. And I just looked at this person and I thought to myself, man, if I'm going to ever go into this industry, that's the type of guy that I want to represent. That's the way I want to represent myself, just with class all the way around. And so when he actually said, yeah, you know, I can help you out. I'll be your mentor. I'm going to help you out to get a name. I'll help you out to design your first act, you know.
And he was your wingman.
Yeah, he was a wingman, man. Like, really was. So what does he do? He says to me, he says, and he, it's almost like he had this structure, and it was really weird. He turned around and said to me, he goes, hey, Corey, what's your favorite movie? I was like, at the time, Roadhouse, 80s.
Roadhouse
was awesome, right? So he goes, well, what's the name of the character in that? I said, Dalton. He's like, perfect. He says, you're a pretty big guy. Pretty, you know, gotta have a last name that represents strength. Strong. Yeah, strong. Dalton Strong. That's it. 10 minutes later, we have a dance name. Done. Right. So from there, he said, we got to create an act. So I needed to do something that was simple because I was pretty new, didn't know how to dance for the shit. And so I just basically had this Terminator act put together, and I was coming through the fog with my laser scope, the black leather jacket, the freaking all the Arnold shit, you know, it's exactly the Terminator role.
Right.
I wanted to do that. And it was weird, you guys, because I actually had to do the voiceover. So I made the voiceover pretending to be Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I'm like walking out there, and just, it was really strange when you do an act when you're pretending to be a character, but it's your voice that you're lip syncing to going out there to entertain a bunch of women and take your clothes off. It's just a weird dynamic. So I'm coming out there, and it was not fantastic at all. So I come out there, and I'm like going, you know, and I get out onto the bloody stage, and I look over in the audience, and there's five girls from my graduating class in high school.
No!
Very first show, right? And I was just like, no shit. So that happened. And so that was kind of like my first night that I ever went into doing full nude stripping. And then honestly, you guys, it went from there for a 25-year career of absolute fucking mayhem of going from every small town throughout across Canada, you know, and through that time, it went from that decade. I ended up finally at the end of, I think it was 1997, as a matter of fact, when I actually finally did a contest where I won it. I won Mr. Nude Western Canada at that time, took second in Mr. Nude Canada, and then things just started to explode, and man, it just got crazy from there. So yeah, that's kind of how it all started off.
So I got to ask, did anything happen with those five girls from the graduating class?
Nah. I was way too like reserved. There's just no way. Like,
you had a lot of young sensei or young Padawan. You had a lot of learning to do.
I was definitely the Skywalker in the situation. I was not the Obi-Wan Kenobi yet. But when I got to the point of like, you know, going to Florida and working at the largest beach club in North America, and I was in a totally different realm.
Yeah.
Different, totally different thing down there, spring break and all that stuff. That's when I started to become the Obi-Wan a little bit, helping some of the other guys out to do their thing.
Corey, honestly, that your story there of how you got into it, that sounds like the opening to Boogie Nights.
Yeah, kind of is. Yeah, a little bit.
You're Dirk Diggler.
A little. I'll give you this. When I think about the three movies that represent my life the most, it would be Joe Dirt, Forrest Gump, and Magic Mike. Throw those all together, you pretty much got me, you guys. You know, it's a long ass story, you know.
I think four has got to be Boogie Nights, though, man. Like, because Mark Wahlberg was underage in that, you know, and then he's like, take your shirt off, you know. But in that, he's like, drop your fucking pants. He's like, all right, you got a good dick on you. Come over to my place. And, you know, he's kind of like talking weird and like, what's your favorite movie? And he's like, we need a name for you, you know, and shit like that.
Yeah, it's true, though. It really is true. Like, there's certain aspects of those movies that there are reality, but really there are Hollywood, too. Like, when I wrote my book, it's the raw, real truth. It's like there's no holds barred. Like, I tell shit in my book that most people don't know as far as the difference between what a dancer in Canada, a male dancer in Canada, has to deal with in comparison to a male dancer in the U.S. And it is drastic. And so for myself, there were sacrifices that I needed to make that really, and sometimes compromise, it made me almost bend my morality to a certain degree. I never broke, but it bent my morality. And I had to really, really focus on the fact that I was an entertainer and that it didn't matter who it was that was out there. I had to do it. It was just, that was what it was, right? So yeah, and to answer really what that question would be as far as the difference is, it's kind of raw, you guys. And so for your audience out there, for anybody that is listening, if you have kids in the car or something, you might want to put some earplugs in for a second, because this is kind of crazy. But what we had to do, you guys are going to just be like, holy shit. What we had to do was this. In Canada, we had about 70 dancers at that time that were in my agency. And so we used to kind of like individually go around from bar to bar and do shows. But before we go out to do a show, it wasn't a matter of just going out there in a costume and taking your clothes off. what we had to do to be able to give the illusion of having the biggest dick on the planet, it was really an interesting process. Had to actually, and if you were lucky, you had a hotel room to go do this in, but a lot of the time it wasn't a hotel room. It might've been a bathroom over by the beer bottles in the back of the bar, or maybe it was even just a squared off curtain right there on stage. But we had to actually, believe it or not, go back, get an erection, tie an elastic band around the base of our dick to be able to hold the blood in there and tie it off. It
was holy fuck.
We had to do that.
Wow.
And so it's, and I did that for almost 10 years. And as crazy as that is, right? Doing five, six shows a week, right? So it's a pretty interesting dynamic. And based on that, like what I'm saying is that that you went, I had some major struggles. Like, in fact, one time when I was doing the actual Mr. Nude Western Canada show, what happened was this. We chose positions. So, it was five guys who were doing it, and I chose last. I was lucky. I was like, right on. I'm going to be out there when the girls are drunk. I got a better chance of winning. I was all pumped up about it, right? So I go back, and at that time, I was doing this crazy-ass Billy the Kid act, and it was like, it just ripped. So I went back and got in my costume and go get tied off and all that. I'm tied off, and I'm like, woo, right on, ready to go. Got a good one, this one. I'm ready to go out there. So I'm standing there at the door. The crowd's into it. Everybody's going off. And this guy that was actually supposed to go on before me, he couldn't make it back in time. So the DJ had said to me, okay, Corey, you're going to need to go back there. We're going to have to put him on fifth instead. So I'm waiting at the door, waiting to go on. And what does this son of a bitch do? He comes running in the club, throws the DJ his music, runs right out on stage. I'm like, are you kidding me? So I'm already standing there tied off in costume, sweat beating down my forehead. And the guy decides to do like a 25-minute Prince set with Purple Rain. I can never listen to Purple Rain the same way ever again. It was such a struggle. So I'm standing there in pain, like literally in pain, waiting to go out. And then I have to now go out and do a full show. Now, so I go out there, I dance my frigging ass off, do the best show I possibly could do. And it was so good that I had to do encores. They kept me out there. So I'm collecting tips and tips and tips. And by the end of it, I got off stage. I'd been tied off for almost an hour and 10 minutes. That is a long time. And so I went back and backstage, snipped that thing off. And I'm like, just hit the roof with the pain and everything else. And I'm, this is so crazy. So I come back and I get announced as I'm like standing there in pain. And I'm hearing them out there, and they're announcing the guys who won, second, who got third and all that. And they didn't even get to me. They couldn't even announce my name. The crowd was already chanting my name before I even
got my gosh. There.
So I came out there, took my award, and I'm standing there with this lineup of girls across the freaking bar. They're all waiting to get a signed picture and all that. And I'm getting some of them hitting on me and saying, what are you doing tonight, baby? And all that shit. And I'm sitting there going, you're talking to somebody that's absolutely useless right now. You can take me back. You can do whatever you want, but this thing ain't even working right now. I can't even feel this shit right now. So that's, and I didn't even feel it for almost 2 days. Just crazy.
For 2 days?
Almost 2 days. Yeah, it was numbness. Total numbness.
So has that caused, I got to ask for the listeners and whatnot and myself, has that caused long-term problems?
Ironically, no. Here's as odd as this is, and I laugh about it because I'm 52 now and I'm still all right. But what I'm saying is that, this is getting a little nasty, but when people use dick pumps?
Yeah.
Dick pumps actually pull you, the male genitalia, it actually pulls it out further. You're actually set back a little bit further, right? So what a dick pump does, it actually pulls it out what's back inside you.
Yeah.
An elastic band, when you do it for that long, it kind of does the exact same thing. It pulls it out and holds it out a little bit longer. So as painful as the process as it wasn't that bad in a lot of ways. So yeah, I've never had
it. So your dick's bigger now is what you're saying.
Yeah, well, it's not bigger. It's just showing a little bit more is all I'm saying. So
because that's why people use penis pumps, right? Is to get bigger and like get an erection, right?
Yeah. That's the process. But it was just I guess you could say a caveman way of doing it to a certain degree. So didn't have to do any of that shit though when I went to Florida. That stuff all stopped. So that was a relief,
Wow. Shit, man. I got a million questions already, but Max, let me let you get in here.
Yeah, no, geez. I mean, one thought that comes to mind is, right, so like we've joked about like had ideas for vlogs, and we thought about like learning how to do like male stripping, like, right, like do like a gentleman's club and stuff. Do you have like pointers for like the audience on what they could do for just some different techniques and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny. I'm probably the wrong guy to ask because as long as the career I had, I probably only had about five different dance moves that I put different spins on every time that I went out to do it. But, you know, the funny thing is it's like human nature. It's all about connection to start with. So regardless of whether it was on stage or off stage, like I was always trying to connect with my audience. I was always trying to get that eye contact, right? Mm. So one of my mentors actually gave me a really good tip, and I always kind of stuck by it, was when I was accepting a tip, right? Like when I was actually taking one from a girl, I was never focused on the girl that I was taking a tip from. That was the key. Never be focused on that person, right? That person's already given you a tip. You're already hustling the next person across the room. Oh, shit. So make eye contact with that person while you're on the other one, right? Ah. So something that I always did. And when I was able to make that eye contact, it was like automatically like just do a couple moves or whatever. And all of a sudden the dollar bill comes up and I'm like, I know where I'm going next, right? So it was just, and that was just the way it was. It was one of those things. So, but my career went, it wasn't always like, you know, steak and lobster. It was craft dinner sometimes. There was shows that were like three girls in the middle of a club in Winnipeg, Canada, and it's minus 30 outside, or it's 1800 girls in Fort Wayne, Indiana, freaking losing their minds.
Fort Wayne.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. I danced. That was the number one show I ever did, was in Fort Wayne, Indiana, believe it or not.
No, we got a funny story about Fort Wayne, Indiana. This is Wingman. This is Wing on Wingman of the Year's network here. Our first Wingman of the Year's from Fort Wayne, Indiana.
No shit. Wow.
Yeah, it's a fucking Fort Wayne, man. There's something in the water out there.
They make them good there, man. They really do. Oh, yeah,
shit.
Yeah.
Wild women out there too, huh? Wow.
Oh, shit, Hunter. I'm telling you, man. I'll never forget it, okay? Because, like, I'm an old 80s guy, you know. Looks like some Rick Springfield, Jesse's Girl, and all that stuff. And Rick Springfield was actually, he was playing there at that exact same club the night before we showed up. And Rick sold, I think, 1,200, 1,300 tickets, men and women. When we showed up there, 1,800 tickets, women, the entire place sold right out. And we drove up to this lineup across the parking lot, and we're just like, what the fuck? And so we come in the back door and we go up the stairs, and you look down from the top over the entire club, and they had this window that was kind of like a one-way mirror type thing. You could see out, you can see in. So all five of us are just standing there waiting to see what happens. They open the freaking doors up, and I swear this truly happened. They open the doors up, and the girls, some went to their seats, but the vast majority of women didn't even go to their seats. They came in concert style and stood right at the front of the freaking stage just waiting for us to show up. And I was like, this is going to be fucking mayhem tonight. Like, we're in trouble, you guys. Like, we need to get a game plan.
A good kind of trouble?
It was good kind of trouble. Like, it was just like, because what happened was, like, we actually, usually you just have two dancers, maybe three dancers go out at one time, right? Because you didn't want to overwhelm the audience. But at that show, man, it was from the first moment we had all guys out there just collecting. So it was so insane that we just pooled our tips. We had a big garbage bag in the back, and we just kept going back there and throwing all our money in the garbage bag. We just kept going and going. And by the time it was all said and done, I mean, it was insane. We sold Polaroids. It was just like posters. Like, there was so much there at the end of the night that the majority of the guys at that time, they were like sitting there going, okay, I'm going to go get some action. I was already married at that point. So I just went back to the hotel room, called my wife, and I was like, hey, baby, I'm just counting the money right now. We're going to Victoria's Secret for you and for me. This is going to be kick ass. So, you know, I was believe it or not, a monogamous stripper. So that's kind of rare in its own right.
That's fucking great. Max, I got to go off script here. I got questions and shit, but
yeah.
Corey, you're blowing my mind right now. This is fucking fascinating shit here. Like,
yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Talk to me about like how you, I don't even know, like, I got so many things coming to my mind right now. It's
yeah, you can say whatever. I'm an open book, man. I am not scared.
So did you guys like have your own individual garbage bags?
Yeah, we did actually.
All right, okay, you didn't share the tips.
Yeah.
So I've been to a couple strip clubs. I've never been to a male strip show or whatnot. What's the difference between, I'm sure there's huge differences, but I've seen like videos and Snapchat stories and shit of girls when they go to shit. Those girls are like grabbing on you and shit, right? Like when you go to a strip club for girls, you're not touching them like that, you know, obviously for reasons. How is that? Like, what's the difference?
I have a really interesting philosophy on that. I love that question, and thanks for asking it, because I wrote a lot about this in the book, because it's a lot to do with male mentality and female mentality to start with. And whether it's the person that's on stage entertaining or it's the audience out there, they both have their unique mentality as far as the way they react. So when you talk about a dancer, right, like what's the first thing you think of when you hear about a stripper? You think about somebody that's probably a slut. They probably are very self-centered. They're probably really super egotistical, all the above, right? Like it's what I've thought. I'm going to be honest, right? Like I never wanted to be that person. So that is the truth. And so switching gears, I'm just going to go back a little bit. When I was working in Canada here, I actually had to not only work dancing for women, but I actually had to work dancing for men as well. There was gay bars that we had to go do. And I'm a straight guy. I'm a totally straight guy. And I'm not homophobic at all, especially after working gay bars. But I'm just saying that the interesting dynamic, and the reason why I'm bringing this up, is because men react the exact same in the gay bar as they do when you're in a female strip club. So, you know, when you go to a female strip club and the girl finishes her act and the guys are like, woo,
right? Yeah, on. It's like, hey, act like we've been here before. Like,
it's the exact same thing in the male, in the gay bar. It's the exact same thing, right? Yeah. So for me, I was an entertainer and I didn't hold back. Like my job was to make that person react, whether it was cry, laugh, freaking scream their lungs out, get sexually turned on, whatever it was. So I was never afraid to turn around and say to the gay couple standing at the front row watching me, hey, you know, here's a promo poster. Make sure that you have a good look at me while you're doing it tonight. Whatever it was, I was like, get on it, have a good time. I was always just being that person that was always trying to just, I guess, like connect with my audience in a way, didn't matter who they were. Like, and it was, and so when you're talking about like the mentality of the audience and the like maybe the girls, some girls would think, yeah, all those male strippers up there, they're a bunch of sluts. But if you heard what some of the male dancers would say about girls in the audience, I know we're freewheeling here, but I wouldn't even want to even repeat it. It was that bad, right? Like they're all just rats. They all just want dick, whatever it was. It was always that thing, right? Whereas that's so not true. Like I know lots of women that go out to ladies' night just to have a good time with their friends.
Right.
So it's just, that's just so not, the stereotypical shit is just bullshit. So, but when it comes down to a female audience, right? Like a female audience is going to be there with their friends. They're going to be taking off, baby. The worst thing I ever had happened with females was a girl actually thought it was going to be a really turn on for me to take her fingernails and rake them across my chest and like drew blood like right across my chest doing it. She got a little bit too overwhelmed. That did happen. Got chased out of a couple of ladies' nights from just like in the Bible Belt area where there was just mayhem and stuff. But
preacher's I'm just daughter. Saying
like that shit was like, women were nowhere near as bad on the head, like mentally, as the way that I feel that men are on women. Women got to go in there. They got to hustle from 12 o'clock in the afternoon, sometimes till 4 o'clock in the morning, depending on the bar. They got to deal with the guy that's sitting there with his gut sticking out, drinking his beer, criticizing her because her ass is too big. And he doesn't like the costume or the music that she got on or whatever. And it's like, yeah, look at yourself, dude. But meanwhile, you're going to go ahead and criticize this person.
That's like the internet in a nutshell right there too. I'm like, these guys just criticizing people and shit, trolls.
Yeah, so I always kind of give kudos to the female dancers. They were hustlers. They were a lot more hustling in the hustling realm than we ever were, really, right? I mean, and we had, you know, some of the guys in my group, they had sugar mamas and stuff like that. I was never one. I was on the sidelines. Like sometimes the sugar mamas would come out and pay for dinner or whatever for all of us, and I'd be the guy that would take the dinner, but I would never be doing the deed. The other guys would be doing the deed. So I was like, oh, yeah, I'll take it, you know. But it was just, that was just, yeah, just crazy stuff. I'm all over the place, you guys, in this conversation. I'm sorry, but
no. I can't help but think that something that came to mind to me is like when you said like you were stripping at the gay bar and whatnot,
yeah,
or wherever it was, and there's got to be some like acting there. There's got to be some like acting skill, because I know like when I've gone to strip clubs with my buddies and whatnot, the girls are such good actors. They make that guy actually think, you know, sometimes there might be, you know, like, oh, maybe the girl's actually into him. But they make guys think, oh, that girl was so into me. Like, think I could have had her. It's acting. So some of the best actors, I think.
Dude, I bumped it up a level though. Like, I'm not even shitting you when I say this. When I was just saying earlier about like your morality and your integrity and bending and not breaking, like I was tied off for gay bar shows too. So I'm out there doing these acts in front of fire and stuff and pretending I'm doing a jerk off show turned on, you know, by all these guys in this audience, which I'm so not. And even if it was a bunch of women, I couldn't, because I had an elastic band around my dick. That isn't going to happen anyway. So, but you're playing the role, it's acting the role out, and it's getting the audience going. Well, my mentor, who was, like I said, the Elvis of stripping, he was really good in that club scene too. So he said to me, he said, if you got the guts to do this, Corey, he goes, you'll be the freaking man. And I was like, what's that? And he's like, if you have the guts to actually go up to some dude that's actually standing on the side of the stage and just grab him and throw him down on the floor and like get on top of him and just pin him down, that domination shit works every time. And I was like, let's do it. So I went in there and just, wow. The first show that I ever did was in the nastiest, dirtiest gay bar in freaking Vancouver, Canada, called the Shaggy Horse Saloon. And it was just gross. Yeah. Man, I'm telling you, man.
Shaggy like, Horse.
The Shaggy Horse Saloon. There was actually a dude that was actually walking. When I walked in that freaking place, I literally walked in, looked down the stairs, and a guy came walking around the corner with assless chaps on and a hairy white ass, like right there, walked up and sat on a freaking Harley on the other side of the bar. And I was like, are you kidding me? I thought I was never going to come out there the same. You know, I was like, whoa, this is scary as shit. But I actually pulled it off. I actually did it. And I walked out the same guy. I was never compromised in any way. And, you know, like I said, it didn't affect me in any way, in any negative way at all. So, yeah.
Corey, you've seen some fucking shit, man. But Max, I got to pass it off to you.
Yes.
Mainly because, Corey, we did an interview before this. And I, as you've seen, I've been drinking a couple beers. This is the part of the show where I got to go piss. This is kind of my signature move at this point. And I'm not even ashamed of it. I don't think it's unprofessional. Max.
If you take a few minutes longer, we know you've gone to tie it off. You know, if you're in there.
Oh, exactly. Yes.
Take it over back.
Yeah, no. I mean, the tying off thing, oh my God. I'm going to actually be a little TMI myself, but because I'm doing this, I think it's going to really grow in this conversation. I get what you mean about the tying it off in the realm of that, trying to spice things up in the bedroom and stuff with the missus, right? Like, and things. And I recently... Give me a cock ring. Fuck it. I recently bought a cock ring. And
yeah.
The one time I tried it, the thing was, it was veiny as fuck. And I'm like, this is the weirdest thing. So I didn't realize like this would be a thing that actually happens. But so it was just like rubber bands and shit.
Yeah, man. There was a particular size of rubber band that you'd loop three times. It was like an industry standard. We all knew this is what you use, right? So but that is the same concept actually, Max, because like, in fact, funny thing you say this, and I'm going off script, but I actually, when I worked in Florida, I not only danced at this club, but I actually also worked, and I was married at this time. I also worked in a porn shop. So it was like they sold toys and sold movies and stuff and rented them out and stuff. So, you know, of course I got discounts and we had some fun. Me and my ex-wife, we just shit like, you know, got the remote control vibrating egg and took her out to the club with her or whatever. And I was like,
holding her
or whatever. Right. Like it was just stuff like, and so we experimented with some of that stuff too. And you know, there's even more, I guess you could say, as far as you can go deeper than just the cock ring. There's other stuff where you can actually wrap other things too, right?
Cock ring.
And that it's crazy as it is, when you start getting curious and you start having some fun with that, like you know, it can get a little nuts, right? So pardon the pun, but yeah, like I never held back about it. I was never exploited in my career, or I don't have any regrets about my career at all. Like nothing, you know? So I was really lucky, you know, I came out unscathed in a lot of ways, even through addictions and stuff like that. I came out the other end actually pretty all right with a fairly level head. So
crazy. I mean, that's great. Just like you said, coming out of that with all these experience, but not like made, like you said, that regret in principle. Mm-hmm. You walked in on that, Hunter. So I decided to open up about my life, and I was saying how I got a toy, and I realized some of the things he talked about was, I saw similarities, and I was like, I didn't know that fucking shit worked that way. So,
An elastic band is just like a cock ring.
Yeah.
It really is. So.
Wow. You know, you learn something new about your co-host every day, they say.
Yeah. I'm so amazed I brought it up too, but I knew it would bring quality to the show. So sometimes you have to, you know, lay on your sword for that shit.
But you know, like if you're going to do anything, you guys, like if you want to quit smoking, you want to get in the gym and work out, whatever it is, you want to build yourself better, you want to be better, you have to be willing to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So to be willing, you have to actually trust somebody or be able to, you know, you want to be able to know somebody that's maybe walked that walk to be able to trust them to be able to help you out, right?
Right.
So that's why, like, even though now I don't do this for a living anymore, why I'm really good at what I do as far as my coaching and stuff goes is because I have walked that walk. I actually say it in my book. I go, here's all my vulnerable shit. Everything from the crazy shit where I almost died, where my ex-wife almost died, where I was addicted to drugs, where I had the cock ring on, whatever, all the stuff, right? I dump it all out in my book. And then when somebody's trying to actually be more authentic as a writer, or maybe just trying to be a better person by addressing their own core values, I reveal all those core values in my book. So I'm like kind of just, and this is sounding kind of creepy, but I'm like, I'm going to show you mine. Show me yours, right? Like I've walked that walk. I've walked through the fire. I want you to do the same thing so that you can be more aware of your own shit, you know? And that made a massive difference for me because I really did honestly work through so many years of dancing and bodybuilding where all I did was focus on my exterior in a perfectionism game, a comparison game that realistically I got through it and everything, but I always struggled with relationships. And it wasn't because I wasn't an honest guy. I was a guy that didn't cheat, but where I struggled was with the power struggle of looking up at somebody or looking down at somebody on their bloody pedestal or on mine and never really connecting. Like it was just kind of living off the exterior, and it still had so many internal issues that I never worked on until just a few years ago. And now I'm a better version of myself than I ever was before. So yeah. It's kind of an interesting thing.
I was going to bring that up actually in reference to your book. How, like, was that kind of a therapeutic process for you to like write this stuff? Cause that's a lot of stuff you're holding inside, whether it be like that lack of connection with, like, you know, like they're obviously guests and they're people watching you, but you, like human beings, you just want to have a connection regardless. And like you said, some of the life experiences you have, like I have to imagine how it's therapeutic.
Yeah. It was as crazy as it sounds, like when I first started writing this book, it was almost a decade ago. And it wasn't quite that long ago, but it was a while ago. And when I did it, this is so funny. I took on the worst job that I ever had. I took on a job doing security 7 days a week, night shifts, 12 hours a shift. Nation. Why? Because I was getting paid to sit in my fucking car and literally voice note shit for 12 hours a night, every night. And that was the way I could get paid to write my book. And so I did that and it funded that project. And then at the end of it, I was like, oh, I have all these great stripper stories that I've documented and everything else, but it just wasn't enough. And so I had this massive book that now is 100,000 words. And I put that thing out there. And then I went to my company, Daring to Share Global, that helped me with my authenticity, put me through all my training and stuff and made me a better author. But what they did was, is they showed me, they connected the dots for my core values, the feelings that I have connected to my core values. And I injected that into my writing. So what happened? I had to go back and rewrite the entire book because of that. And I actually did. Wow. And so when I did that, though, that was when the healing process started. That's when I could connect the dots and go, oh, yeah, fuck. I went on this 8-year Forrest Gump walk after my divorce, all sitting there blaming myself and trying to fix the problem in my own head like so many people do. And I didn't really even look at my own accountability for it or connect the dots as to why the shit happened in the first place. I was just sitting there going, how dare that bitch cheat on me? I never cheated on her. And I was the one out there stripping for women all the time. You know, how could she ever do that to me? I was such a good guy. How, you know, and I was always like, oh, poor me. It was like, it's not all about you, buddy. You know, that's what it ended up being in the end. And so where I actually, the dot that I connected was based on my creativity. As crazy as this sounds, when we went through our struggles, it was when I actually got out of the dance industry for a while. A lot of people would think it would be the opposite. How could you be married to a male stripper? Well, she fell in love with that guy that was charismatic, that was creative. And so when I wasn't charismatic and creative anymore, I lost the feeling of excitement that made me that way. So that changed me. I was a different person, right? So it just, I drove her towards that in a lot of ways. So now, you know, 15 years later, after going through separation and divorce and having a lot of bitter conversations, I was literally able to go back to my ex-wife and say, hey, I was inauthentic. I apologize for that. I want you to be able to move on. I want to be able to move on. This is why this happened. I'm taking at least 50% accountability for that now. I'm taking it off. I want you to do the same thing. And believe it or not, I became a role model for her. And she actually found her own authenticity and starting living her own life as well. So that really was a gratifying process, right? It just means a lot, you know, when you can see those results, you know, it's an impact that you're having, right? So I just think the way that my process is, it's very unique in comparison to the standard shit that everybody does. Because I don't lean on religious or political ideology at all. I don't even talk about it. It's a waste of time. So,
Corey, that's deep as fuck, dude. Like, honestly, like, we're gonna probably promote this, you know, like male exotic dancer, but I hope a lot of people, when they listen to this, that's some deep shit, man. I think they could really learn some stuff from this, and that's some wingman shit. Like, self-awareness, I constantly preach it, is like one of the best things. I might preach it, but I'm probably not even the best at it. You can always learn and whatnot. I'm 27, for instance, and whatnot. Brother, there's so much you can learn about yourself.
I'm a coach. I'm not even the best at it, because you never will be. Nobody is. Like, it's not a thing that you can perfect. It's just progression, right? Like, every day you're waking up and you're not on top of the world. So you got to be able to kind of connect the dots and go, why do I feel disconnected today? Oh, well, because maybe connection is the way I feel when I actually have good relationships. Well, maybe one of my relationships is compromised because I'm actually feeling disconnected now. Now, which one is it? Is it my dog, my cat, my freaking my girlfriend? Like, what is it? And then I can kind of go and address it. But otherwise, to me, you're just living on a freaking slot machine of life, letting the chips fall where they may. I'm a little more systematic. Like, I'm kind of going, I had this failure. And so if I want to hit the higher state of consciousness with my next partner, whether that's personally or professionally, I need to be aware of their shit too, right? And know what triggers them. So that it's just like that love language thing that they talk about. You can't understand how somebody loves, accepts love. Maybe they accept gifts, or maybe they want a kiss on the neck randomly, right? Like, you can't give it unless you know what they define as it. So it's kind of like that with core values and the feelings. It's kind of the same sort of thing. If you're more in tune with that, it's that work that you can do, in my eyes anyways, to sustain a longer term and better quality relationship. Simple as that, really.
No, I agree. I think everyone should look from everyone's got failed relationships, unless you're married to high school sweetheart, you know, but yeah. I think everyone should look at those as learning experience. Hey, what can I do better? What can I do better in this next relationship? Like, where did I fuck up? Cause you know, it takes two to tango, you know what I mean? Especially in a relationship, you know? So look what you did wrong. What could you have done better? And have that communication. I think communication is probably the number one thing. Have that communication in your next relationship.
I communicated well, Hunter, but I didn't connect, right? Like, I was high hanging home, right? Like, I was Ricky and Lucy guy, you know, is dinner ready? You know, get me a beer. And it's like, that only goes so far. Eventually they get sick and tired of that shit and they're looking for something more. And that's why a lot of the time I'd see a lot of, you know, Bible Belt wives coming to our shows. Because they were like, I want something more. I'm sick and tired of the guys going asking me to get a beer.
So you were just going through the motions is what you're saying.
Yeah, I went through the motions for a while. I took it for granted, man. You know? And what happens when you take things for granted?
So how does one get out of that if somebody's feeling that way that's listening right now? How do you get out of going through the motion?
Well, first off, I know this is really standard default self-help stuff, but if you don't actually recognize what you're grateful for in your life, if you don't actually sit there and write it down, like I do five every day in the morning. It's the first thing I do to set my brain. So even if it's just saying I'm grateful for my awesome boxer dog that I just got last year, right? Or maybe it's something that I'm grateful for, the pain and the struggle that I went through my divorce or my addictions, right? And I'm always trying to create something new that I'm grateful for, not repeat. So when I recognize that, then I'm turning around and going, yeah, you know, I'm having a shitty day, but hey, I have this and I have this and I have this, and it smooths out a shitty day into a not so shitty day. So that's one, but also realizing that and I've heard this so many times, but it is so bloody true that, you know, it's a business. Marriage and relationships is a freaking business. It's an agreement that you get into with somebody. And unless, if you go into business with somebody and only one partnership in your business, or one person that has a partnership in your business, is doing their job and working on it, and the other person's kind of like riding the coattails, how does that feel? Not very good, right? Like, you're probably going to fire that person, or you're going to end that contract sooner or later. It just builds up and animosity grows. So to me, it's just, again, it's just coming back to working by connecting, not just communicating. And that takes that extra bit of work. So I actually literally have my core values written down where I see it every fucking day with my feelings that are attached to those core values, so I can recognize it. And the reason why I do that is because it's too bloody easy to get triggered out there by shit that is nothing to do with what you're truly triggered about. So what I mean by that is, why does road rage happen? You go down the street, somebody cuts you off, you freak the fuck out, you're sitting there going, fuck you, motherfucker, whatever, and you're all pissed off. It's not about the guy that cut you off. It's about the shit that you just went through at your house because you're not satisfying your woman or something, right? You're really triggered about something else. So it's that to what we call this is actually the arc of intense energy in my training. So it's just more so like you want to catch on a 9 out of 10 scale or whatever. You don't want to get there. You when your emotions are built up that high, because when you get to that point where you bottled shit up, what you're doing is you're going to spit something out. It's completely inauthentic, and it's going to be something you're probably going to regret. If you can catch it at a 2 or a 3 and go, okay, this is why this is happening, I'm going to go take a walk for a while. I'm going to come back and we'll deal with this later. At least you're keeping it at that 2 or 3 and you're coming back with a rational mindset instead of letting emotions take over. Because that's the key. That's the first section of my training is authenticity and emotional intelligence. If you don't have emotional intelligence, you can't have authenticity. It's just as simple as that, because you're not speaking from a rational. It's
almost like you're like two people.
Yeah, yeah, you really are. Like, why does the stock market bounce up and down? Emotions.
It's pretty, people basically get,
you know, freaked out. It's emotions, right? Meanwhile, if they just took a step back and looked at it from a rational mindset, they might not do that, right? Well, I don't think Warren Buffett works off of emotions. I don't, you know. No. So, yeah, it's just a interesting cycle. And it's always in my head, you guys. Like, I spit this out all the time, but I practice what I preach, you know. So,
no, that's amazing. It goes back to self-awareness. What you're saying about, like, the connection thing, it's actually, like, making me think and whatnot, like, past relationships and whatnot. So, I think that's fucking great. Max, you got any takeaways from that or any further questions on that in particular?
No, I mean, that's valid. I mean, there's different life experiences that I've gone through that, you know, you're right. Like, you kind of lie to yourself or try to make it work. I've talked about it on the show a little bit, but I've had like kind of a rift apart with my father. And during it was very much like a lot of what he wanted. And I kind of like sort of complied and tried to do things to make him happy, because I wanted to, like, you know, I think there's always that complex with a son and a dad. You want to make your dad happy. And I got to the point where I'm like, I just can't. And I would, you know, try to have him see my side, and it just never worked. And it got to the point where I had to like leave that situation. And you're right, it happens so much. But when you realize, like, I gotta just be appreciative and love myself and have that authenticity, it permeates into so many other areas of your life. So I think that's the biggest takeaway for me with what you're talking about. So thank you for that.
The ripple effect, Max. It truly is the ripple effect, man. It's literally in my training. Like, what you just said is like, you're already guiding yourself there by just saying that. I'm not some Superman that says, you know, I've Mr. Fix It to fix everybody's problems. All I do as a leader is turn around and go, hey, I'm just going to gently guide you in this direction. I've went there already. If you want to go there, I can help you out, but you got to
make them drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. You know, it's the process. So yeah, I mean, but at the same time, like, you know, when you're talking about the father relationship, for me, I had a real struggle with that myself as well, because my father, as good of a man as he was, and he was amazing. Like, he passed away a couple of years ago at 97, but he was in World War II, Canadian Navy, right? So he was really programmed to
Canadian Navy.
Yeah. He was in the North Atlantic, actually.
Wow.
So he was programmed with zero emotion in a lot of ways at times. And also he had his own set of mental health issues in his family background, being from the Depression era, where people were really, like, you know, dealing with a lot of shit that was way worse than what we deal with now. And there was suicide in the background of that family background as well, which really affected him in a lot of ways. And that shit drops down through your family, man. It just does. And we all have it. We all have a bad apple in there that's caused that domino effect to happen. And you only know what you know. Right. So for him, it was tough. And I was always looking for that acceptance. I was always looking for that pride from my father. And I had it. But at the same time, you know, I really wanted that emotional connection that I just didn't really have the honeys and love yous and sweeties in my household when I grew up. It just wasn't like that. They loved me, but it just wasn't like that. Right. So I found my emotional connection in a different way, which was opened a whole other door up when I went to Florida. That opened that door up. It didn't take me to where I went, but that door was a whole lot of fun for a whole long time. So, you know, it's crazy.
That is crazy. Cause like, we were talking on the interview before this, actually, we were talking about like, how guys or girls have daddy issues and guys have mommy issues. Right. And but it like, it, what you were saying there, like, I think us three at least can correlate with like, oh, something with our dads and whatnot. Is your parents have such a huge impact on who you are as a person. It's absolutely insane.
Massive, man. You know, I remember my grandmother, I mean, I remember where she was standing when she was looking at me saying the court at 7 years old, you know, and I was probably doing this, but it was just like, man, it hit me in the heart. She turned around and says, you know, she said, oh yeah, you know, you're definitely a follower and not a leader. And she just kind of looked at me and injected that right into my head. And as crazy as that is, like, I actually allowed it to embed. And when I was going for corporate positions, even later on in life, after I got out of dancing, I always settled for just being at the bottom of the totem pole, never pushed to get higher. I was in my comfort zone. I was okay with it because I was never a leader. I was just a follower, right? So I kind of just kept that mindset, which is okay to be a follower if you're following the right people in some ways. But at the same time, it didn't allow me to grow and build myself.
You were listening to somebody else's voice.
Yeah. And the irony, Hunter, is that when I went through my training, my actual instructor said to me, this was the cool part. She turned around and she said to me, Corey, I want you to do a little homework for me tonight. And she got me to define what a true leader is. And I said, you know, gently guiding somebody in the right direction, not telling them what to do, all that kind of shit, and leading by example. Right. And then she said to me, she said, okay, well, I want you to take this home with you and basically ask yourself, when was your grandfather or my parents? When was my mom and when was my dad? When were they leaders? When were they truly representing what you define as a leader? And I went, my dad did at work. You know, he was a bridge builder, all that shit. Like, you know, he represented leadership at work, but not so much at home. My mom, well, default housewife. She really, as much as housewives are, it's a job, but I'm just saying, like, it was very default.
Yeah.
So was she leading? No, she kind of like settled for other things instead of going for her dreams. So when she was saying that to me at 7 years old, she wasn't talking about me. She was talking about herself. And when realized that was when that block went gone. Right.
But it's like when dads are like trying to force their kids to like be a professional athlete. It's you're trying to make it what you couldn't do.
Yeah.
They don't realize what they're doing to the kids and whatnot.
Oh, it screws you up. Yeah. Totally screws you up. You know, my parents didn't exactly want me to go be a male exotic dancer, but I did. So, you know,
hey man, it made you who you are, right? I mean, hey, let me ask you this. Do you regret anything in your life or would you keep it everything?
Shit, I regret certain things for sure. Like, it's not about the industry as much as it is just about like not really working on myself enough. And what I mean by that is if I had have worked on myself more, I would have actually had better quality, especially when it came to relationships. My book actually is a lot about relationships because to me, life's all about relationships and creating great memories. So, you know, I wanted that to be a major component of the book, but I had some failures in there that really, you know, when I look back now, I'm like, shit, I wish I had a second opportunity with that, you know, because I really kind of wasn't there. Like, and it comes with maturity and wisdom, of course, and growth and all that stuff. And you kind of we can all kind of look back and go, if I had a second shot at that or whatever, I could turn back the hands of time. You know, I might've done that a little bit better or whatever. And there was some people in my book that I can say that, you know, butterfly effect moments.
Right? I was going to say that's the butterfly effect. Like I'm young and whatnot, but I feel like I wouldn't change anything. Cause like, if you change one thing, like, you have no idea where you're going to be. And that's almost scarier. And people are scared of the unknown. That's why they don't do shit like making content and shit. The butterfly effect is fucking terrifying.
Yeah. But it's really crazy is when you write a book and then you put it all down and you express what a butterfly effect moment was for you. And then that ex-girlfriend of yours that you had that with, she reads your book. That's interesting because I actually have a moment in my past where I could go one of two directions and I took the direction of morality and integrity. But at the same time, if I had taken the other direction, I probably would have been in a direction of far more financial stability and been living a bit more of a rock star lifestyle and not gone through a lot of struggles, but I went with the morality and integrity. And in the end, after she read my book, she was like, you made the right decision. Like she said, she told me that I made the right decision, but it was interesting because, you know, there was a lot of feelings there and it was a very, very tough decision for me at that time in my life. Let's just put it this way. This woman had more going for her than most. And when it came down to it, most guys would be drooling to be able to be with her. And I turned my back on her and turned around and went, nope, I'm sticking with what I have. And I ended up married to that girl.
So how did it make you feel when she told you that you made the right decision when it was more of morality based, making a good decision?
It kind of put me at peace with it. It gave me some real good closure towards it in a good way. You know, and she's still a good friend of mine, right? Like we stay connected on social media and stuff. I mean, she's married, has a couple kids, you know, and all that. She's moved on with her life completely. But at one time, like she was very, you know, a very important component of my life. And, yeah, you know, when you have those feelings come up and you're just, you know, it's like, I was sitting there going, which way should I go? And,
yeah.
You know, I went the one way and I'll never know what the other direction would have been.
Well, dude, we're all just ships in the night, man. We're just going to our destination. We're just passing. It's just happening, you know? It's
yeah. But, you know, the door that I opened up, you guys, to emotional connection, that was an interesting one because, like, here's where I could talk for days on my book because it's just so insane. But, you know, when I was living up here in Canada, like, I was a former bodybuilder and I really tuned in my body. I was, like, you know, kept in really good shape. I think the worst thing I did was drink a few beers on the weekend or whatever with my friends when I was in high school. Never smoked weed, never did anything. Like, I was clean as a whistle. And so I left this environment at one point, and when I won Mr. New Western Canada, I had this credibility, and this agent came to me from Florida, and I knew him from years before, and he said, yeah, if you ever want to come down to work at my club, you know, you have a job. Like, he said, you know, here's my card. So I called him up, and of course I just happened to hit him at the right time, and his group was coming up to Canada. And he said to me, he goes, yeah, if you can learn the choreography with these guys and you can get the guys to the shows on time, you have yourself a full-time position. And I was like, done. So I learned it in 3 weeks. And I took these guys to all their shows and we toured around all over the place. And then I just jumped. And it was the craziest jump that I've ever made. I left my family. I left my friends, jumped in the back of a tour van. My dad drove me across the border into the US. I had my luggage and everything in the tour van. And I jumped in that friggin' van and diagonal straight across the country to Panama City Beach, Florida. And I spent a decade there. But when I ended up going, I was 3 days into this, you guys, and I drive up, and like, we drive up to the club. There's a life-size billboard of all of us, like there, as soon as you drive into the club, like, this place was insane. It held about 8,500 people. Like, it was just crazy. So, like, you go into this MTV world of spring break and nonstop partying, right? And I got introduced to the owners of the club, instant VIP status, never waiting in line. Like, everybody wanted to know me. It was just like, you know, they all wanted to know me for all the wrong reasons, right? So, like, I come on in there, and then all of a sudden, like, my buddy Damon, who I just met from Alabama, this great guy, and he turned around, he said to me, yeah, man. He goes, if you want to have a good time like everybody else is having around here, take this little pill. And I was like, oh, what's one little pill going to do to me? Pop. And yeah, 45 minutes later, when the ecstasy hit me, it was like, holy shit. My opened up emotions came out, and it was like I tasted food for the very first time. And it was just like, wow. And let the games begin, boys. It was absolute fucking craziness. And yeah, it was just like, if that shit, it was the most ultimate freebird experience you could ever imagine. Like, I was paid to party. Okay. Like, you know, you're there at the pool deck all day. You're attracting women into the club. You go work out for an hour or so. Then you go learn some choreography. Then you're on stage at 7 o'clock. You do a show from 7 till 10. Then the show ends. You go back to get your music from the DJ. He pops a couple of ecstasy pills in your freaking hand. You got free drugs for the friggin' night. Now you're partying till 4 o'clock in the morning. And now you're ending up watching the sunrise with somebody on the friggin' beach. You go back, get a couple hours sleep, and you do the whole fucking thing all over again. And it just starts going and going and going, right? And it's just like, stressed out from partying too much. As crazy as that sounds, right? Wow. So, yeah, you know, I have stories in my book where I actually had an all-nighter party with my friends that were locals. We ended up hanging out at their house like till the sun rose, and then got a pontoon boat, went out to a deserted island for the day with about 15 of us. We're all running around out there naked, like, I mean, G-strings at best. And there was a girl standing there that I knew. She was super cool, one of my party buddies. And she's standing there talking with a bunch of people. And I picked up a dead jellyfish off the freaking ground on the beach, ran up behind her and shoved the jellyfish down the back of her G-string. And she's running around with me, and I'm in a G-string, and we're on this friggin' beach. And she's like chasing me, screaming at me, trying to throw this dead jellyfish.
Oh my gosh.
You know, meanwhile, you know, dudes are at work on a Tuesday morning, you know, going to do the 9-to-5 grind, and I'm out there running around in a G-string and a jellyfish in my hand. Like, it's just fucked up, you know? So that was the life, you guys. Like, it was.
Yeah,
just,
you, Corey, you got some fucking stories, man. I wish we had more time to fucking get them all. Maybe we'll get you back on here again, because I definitely want to read your book now, because, like, that's some of the stories you're telling. Fucking crazy, insane. But let me pass it to Max, if he's got any final questions, and bring us into our final segment.
Yeah, no. The only question I have is, I know because we've had people that do entertaining that they might not want to answer it specifically, but what's the either the biggest tip you've ever gotten, or what's like a tip that was so memorable when you were a performer? Like, is there one you're like, this is insane?
Well, yeah. First off, I'll say that the night that we did Fort Wayne, Indiana, that wasn't an individual tip, but it was most definitely the most I ever made in one night. Now, here was the crazy part. We had, back in the day, we had those Polaroid cameras, and the MC, he turned around, and there was my buddy Michael Stryker, actually, at the time. He was like big old 6'4" dude, pretty hung. And so he turns around and grabs the Polaroid, and he pulls open his G-string and snaps a picture, and then the MC grabs it and said, the first girl to throw her bra and panties on the stage. And it was like fucking pile of them on the stage. You know, we actually had a pile literally on the stage, which was pretty cool. It was pretty wild stuff.
Yeah.
But the biggest tip that I ever made was actually in Destin, Florida. And I wasn't even doing an act that night. I just actually randomly went out with the guys. I wasn't even getting paid. I just wanted to go hang out and just do a show, or not even do a show, just do what they call trailing. So it was like, you just run around in a G-string and collect tips. They just say, oh, here's Corey Lane. And you just kind of come out and just collecting tips. And all of a sudden this one woman just turned around, and she came up to me, and she held a $100 bill up. And she's like, I've always wanted to tip a dancer a $100 bill. And she's like, congratulations, you're the guy. And she shoved it down my G-string. I was like, damn, okay, cool. So I went and hung out with her after the show. Yeah. And I was like, you know, had a couple of drinks and talked to her. And she's like, oh, do you have a girlfriend? I'm like, yeah, she's over there. And she just gave me shit. Why the hell are you hanging out with me? You know, you have a girlfriend in here. You shouldn't be hanging out with me. You tip me $100, right? It's part of the program. And she's like, no, go be with your woman, right? So that was honestly, no, on a night that I didn't even do a friggin' act, Max, that was my biggest tip that I ever got. So it's kind of weird.
Oh, dropping Benjis. I like it.
Yeah, it was weird, really strange. But yeah, guys, like, the stories are endless, I swear to God. But if you want to hear my ultimate wingman story, I can give you that in another couple minutes. I'll give you my ultimate wingman story.
There we go, wingman story.
Okay.
Yeah, sure, I got
wingman stories.
Dude, that's what friends do. Friends wingman each other.
It's Alberta, Canada. It's my first time I've ever done a show with a dance review. Five guys. We go out to this place out there. I'm intimidated the whole nine yards. First night in town, right? It's a Monday night. Come into this new club where the new fresh meat in town. They have this group that's been out there doing shows for ages, but the girls are hungry for a new group, and we're the guys. We show up there, ragtag group of guys, and my buddy Dean, who's like my closest buddy, we've been best man in our weddings the whole nine yards, he turns around to me and he's like, and this was after the show was said and done and everything and the bar's hopping, and he comes up to me, he's like, bro, you're not going to believe what just happened. And I'm like, what's up? And he's like, yeah, back there, the girl that's running the coat check, like, she has the coats all set up, and then behind the coats, there's actually a little space, and you kind of can go back in there a little bit further, and there's a chair at the back. And she's like, her friend, actually, the coat check girl's one of her hot friend was back there, and she just actually gave me a blowjob back there on that chair. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And I was like, yeah. I was like, wow, that's crazy.
Nice girl.
He's like, yeah, but I can hook you up too. And I was like, dude, are you kidding me? And he's like, yeah. And we were dirty dogs back then. We're like in our early 20s, right?
Yeah.
So he turns around and he says to me, he's like, yeah. So he comes up and introduces me to the other girl, the actual one that was running the coat check. And yeah, you know, your friend hooked me up there. You know, I think you need to hook my buddy up too. All of a sudden she's like, yep. Okay. So I wheel around the back. Same thing. Come out of the bloody coat check with a smile on my face. He's standing by the bar. We grabbed a couple beers, clink. Cheers, right on. It was like the ultimate. Wow. I was just sitting there going, man, you like literally set it up right there. It was just so dirty dog. Like, it was just the biggest slut move. But
got right to the point. That's great. Right, that's great, man. Your boy, like, impressive. Your boy's a wing, yeah.
Ultimate wing, man. Ultimate. Like, the guy was just golden, still is one of my best buddies. So yeah, it's crazy, man.
Well, we love a good wingman story here at Wingman of the Year. But Corey, we appreciate you coming on, man. Your stories are fucking insane, like some of the shit, like the tying the dick off, man, that's fucking wild. I had a pleasure fucking winging it with you, Max. Did you have a pleasure winging it with him?
I mean, Christ, I told him about contraptions I got. So yeah, it was great
stuff. You stuck your dick in?
Yeah, I didn't think I would, you know, one of my funny sayings this year, I didn't have that on my bingo card, so I It was pretty good, I guess.
You never know what you're going to get into on Winging It. That's the moral of the podcast.
Hey, while you were gone, I even told Max about having me and my ex-wife and getting her a remote control, a vibrating egg, and freaking going to the club with her with that thing and holding the freaking remote while we were dancing.
I missed all the good shit.
Yeah. He was talking about his toys. I was talking about my toys. You were off peeing.
Well, it'll give you a reason to listen back.
There you go.
Fuck. Yeah, I'm going to listen to my own podcast. You're exactly right. Love hearing myself talk and whatnot. All right, Corey, appreciate you coming on.
Corey, how can we find more stuff about you?
Yeah, so this is kind of a cool time to be talking about this, actually, because truthfully, my book's a pretty good sized book, and it's been a really heavy shipping cost to ship to the US. And so being here in Canada, it's kind of pricey to get a book down there. And you can order it through my website at takeitoff.ca. And if you order it through there, I can send you a signed copy if you want to pay the extra money. But the truth, just to really be real about it, if you go to amazon.com, you can pick up Take It Off, Revelations of a Male Exotic Dancer there, and you won't have to pay the same kind of insane shipping because it's coming from the States, right? So you can go there. You can get it at barnesandnoble.com as well, or for that matter, in Canada, it's Chapters Indigo. But here in the next couple of weeks, I would say I'm going to be releasing a Kindle copy. So instead of having to do the hardback and all of the hard copy stuff, it's a lot cheaper. Obviously, it's not quite as cool, but at the same time, it's one of those things that's where it's going right now. Really, I mean, most people are starting to read the ebook stuff, right? So definitely, but that takeitoff.ca is where you go if you want to actually have a look at the authenticity training that I'm doing for one-on-one training as well, because it does actually work with the book. And I'm going to be package dealing the course with the book and throwing in the Kindle version and maybe even a very dirty bookmark in there. You never know. So versatile bookmark. I'm thinking about the balls and the penis on one side, and then you flip it over and it's a ruler. That'd be a pretty good bookmark.
So, versatile.
Thinking about that, the takeitoff bookmark.
Like that.
Guys definitely measure. If they say they don't, they're fucking lying. At least once in their life. That's a hot take.
Yeah, discipline your disappointment, boys. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, no, it's funny. I thought that was a funny gimmick, actually, too. So I might just do that one.
Hell yeah.
But,
all right, Max, take us out of here.
All right, well, Corey, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much. Wingers, you know what it is. This guy's a goddamn wingman, and you should be too. All right. Signing out. Peace. Yeah, you like that one?
Bye.
Let's get ready to win.